The reading is taken from John 9:8-25. His neighbours and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Is this the same man who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed that he was. Others said, "No, he only looks like him." But he himself insisted, "I am the man." "How then were your eyes opened?" they asked. He replied, "The man they called Jesus made some mud, put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see." "Well, where is this man?" they asked him. "I don't know," he said. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Therefore the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. "He put mud on my eyes," the man replied, "and I washed, and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But the others asked, "How can a sinner perform such signs?" So they were divided. Then they turned again to the blind man. "What have you to say about this? It was your eyes he opened." And the man replied, "He's a prophet." They still did not believe that he'd been blind and had received his sight, and they sent for the man's parents. "Is this your son?" they asked. "Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that he can see?" "We know he's our son," the parents answered, "and we know he was born blind. But how he came to see now, or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He's of age. He'll speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders, who'd already decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. That was why his parents said, "He is of age. Ask him." A second time, they summoned the man who had been blind. "Give glory to God by telling the truth," they said. "We know this man is a sinner." He replied, "Whether he is a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see."
Well, my name's Rachel Gardner, and I am thrilled to be with you this morning and speaking into the Talking Jesus series. And as Ian has said, I and my husband Jason, we're part of the team that have planted into Preston Minster. I am a southerner, I'm a Londoner, I've been in the north for 3 months. I've weathered your winter. Please accept me. It's so good. Oh, thank you. The 9:30 didn't clap me. Thank you. You're my favourite already. A few years ago, I got on a plane to go and speak at a Christian youth festival in Norway. And it was a tiny little plane. And next to me, between me and the aisle, was a spare seat. And I did what we all do, which is, please no one come and sit in that seat. Please keep that seat empty. Because I wanted space to like spread out. And just before the doors closed, this enormous Norwegian Viking, I can't describe it any other way, got on the plane and began to kind of hoik himself down the central aisle. And sure enough, stopped next to my empty seat. And his name was George. Big tattoos, big dreadlocks, huge guy. And he looked at me and he said, I can't do the accent, massive beard, a bit like yours, glorious. And he said, "Do you mind if a big Norwegian atheist Viking sits next to you?" And I said, "No, as long as you don't mind that an extrovert British Christian is sat here." So he sat down with me, and for the whole journey, we had this amazing conversation about faith, about everything, science, philosophy. He had so many really well-formed and thought-through ideas around nihilism and atheism. And at the end, he said this to me, "I prefer to believe, Rachel, what I believe." He prefers to keep his own belief. "But what you believe, I think, offers more hope and more peace." Isn't it nice when you have those stories that make for great sermon illustrations and you can lock them away? And then 2 weeks ago, actually last week, I was walking through Preston City Centre. And like you guys, we run Alpha really regularly at the Minster. And we had 60 people rock up on Wednesday, mostly that don't know Jesus. Atheists, recovering alcoholics, drug dependent people, incredible. And I thought, I want to ask someone, we've just been getting out every day on the streets, talking to people on Preston High Street, inviting them along to Alpha. And I thought, I'll do my bit. So I walked around a corner and I felt the Spirit nudge me to talk to a woman who had loads of piercings. I just love people that look like they've got a story. I just gravitate towards them. They're just beautiful people. So she was looking in the window. I thought, I'll talk to her. Oh my days, the disdain with which she looked at me. She didn't want anything to do with me or about Alpha or free pizza or underfloor heating or anything that I was trying to sell her the Minster with. You know, talking about Jesus in our culture is difficult, isn't it? And I know probably back in the day when it was more of a Christian country, maybe it was easier, maybe not. I think it's always been difficult to really share about a transformed life with Christ. But today, particularly, if you and I want to talk about Jesus, we are going against the grain of secularism, of the dominant story that there is nothing outside of this life. There is me, myself, and I, and there is nothing else. And some of you might have come up against this, that actually when you're doing things that are kind of in the category of nice religious person, like you're the one that'll take the bins out of work, or you will cut your neighbour's hedge, he's a nice Christian, or you'll do CAP, or those brilliant programmes. Can I just say, CAP is not nice, it's life-changing. It is life-changing. Let God stretch you if that's something he's calling you to. But when we're doing those sorts of things, our friends that aren't Christians, they quite like that. They tolerate that. But the moment we want to sort of step out of that box and begin to say, listen, it's not religion for me. This is life and death for me. I was not looking around for religion. I happened to land on Christianity because it seemed like a nice Western one. Like, this is life and death. My brothers and sisters die for this around the world. Like, when we want to kind of take it to a different level, when we want to say that Jesus actually is the one that's making all the difference for our struggles around our mental health, when we want to take it that far, suddenly what we often find is we kind of face a little more opposition, or people kind of talk to you and look at you a little bit strange. And what that can do is that can create within us a narrative that says, don't be that weird Christian. Don't go there. Don't do that. And we can kind of think, I'll leave it to the experts. I'll leave it to the trained ones who know how to work out the email system and also know how to talk about Jesus. Like, we'll leave it to them and we'll rock up every Sunday and kind of get a bless up. Now, I know that's not what any of us think, but on our bad days we do, don't we? And there's a brilliant book by a guy called Jonathan Dodson, all those of you out there who love reading, called The Unbelievable Gospel. It's a fantastic book on evangelism, The Unbelievable Gospel. And he talks about the four great defeaters for the contemporary age. What are the things that stop you and I, that defeat us even before we even begin to talk about Jesus? I'm going to rattle through very briefly the four defeaters. And then when I've got us to the point where we are down on our knees going, oh my days, where's the hope? I'll bring four great releases. So hold on for that, okay? Brilliant. So defeat number one, too impersonal. So this is what's going on in our minds. We live in an age, don't we, that emphasizes individualism. And because of that, it's become a taboo, really, to share about a belief that would encroach on someone else's right to choose the life and the truth that they want. One of the kind of phrases around youth culture is, you do you. You know, whatever makes you happy, you do you. And so what we can do is we can fear sharing Jesus because it sounds like in our head we're telling everybody that we're better than them. And that might be something that's held you back. You love your neighbours, you love your friends, you love your work colleagues. And actually you realise when you start to share Jesus, you start to think, they're hearing me against the backdrop of Christians think they're better than everybody else. And I don't know how to deal with that. And I don't want to be one of those kinds of Christians in their life. That might defeat us. Number two, the second great defeater, too preachy. So where I've spent 18 years in North London, I am a Londoner. Like, at the moment, if you guys were a church in London, I would think there was, you know, life had seeped out of you. Because in London, everyone's shouting and hollering stuff and yawning if you're boring and all that kind of stuff. And in North London, where I used to live, on a Saturday morning, everybody will be out in force on the streets. The Muslim Brotherhood, the Jains, you'd have the Hindu worshippers, you'd have Hare Krishna, they'd all be out on the streets selling their wares. And you'd have the kind of the safe Christians that get the chair and say, sit there, I'll pray for you to be healed. And then you'd have the crazy Christians with their felt telling everybody, turn or burn. And we kind of know about that in culture. And if you turn on God TV, some of the preachers are quite like that. And if you talk to your friends that aren't Christians about preachers, Christian preachers, what they hear is, you're going to hell. Like, that is quite strong in the culture of the day, isn't it? And so we can fear that sharing Jesus sounds like we're scalp hunting. And so that can defeat us. We can think, well, Jesus said, go and make disciples. And I want to make disciples. I don't just want to get more bottoms on seats. But we fear sharing Jesus in case we sound like we're scalp hunting. Maybe you've been affected by that too. And number three, the third great defeater. Oh, this word. Too intolerant. That's a buzzword for our age, isn't it? So the old tolerance, the old idea around tolerance went like this, and you'll recognize this. I respect your right to disagree with me, and I will defend your right to disagree with me. That's kind of the philosophical idea for a very long time within this nation, wasn't there? I would say that probably died about 30 years ago. And what we've seen, particularly in the last 10 years, is a new tolerance. And it goes like this. All views are of equal worth. Every single person's idea is of equal worth. So you cannot claim exclusivity. You cannot claim to know the truth. You cannot say that Jesus alone has power to save. Can you see the subtle difference? It sounds so good, doesn't it? All views are equal. But actually, where it leads is it leads to quite a dangerous totalitolerance. Try saying that with your teeth in. A dangerous kind of totalitolerance. So you might have, if you ever watch TV, if you ever get involved in social media, if you are part of a university, if you have neighbours that aren't Christians, if you have a pulse, you will have come across the idea of no platforming. So it's the idea that if I don't agree with what someone's about to say, even if I agree with everything else they say, I'm going to no platform them. So a classic one in universities is Peter Hitchens, who is not Christian. He's a famous LGBTQI activist. Because he once said something about trans people that the trans community felt was offensive, even though he's an LGBTQI activist, he is no platformed at universities because what he says is offensive. So this is an idea that is not unique to church. Actually, society is kind of imploding with this new kind of totalitolerance, this inability to work out how do we disagree well without ripping each other apart. So cancel culture, erasing people because of their views. And so this is how really I think it's summed up. And I've worked with youth culture, young people, for a very long time. And I think even if this doesn't resonate with you, if you have people in your church under the age of 30, this absolutely is the world that they are speaking and sharing their faith into. So this is a new kind of totalitarian. It goes like this. Your words, your ideas, your beliefs, if they disagree with what I think or feel, they will automatically so significantly affect my ability to function that even your presence damages me. And I need you to come and ally with me, come on my side, and speak against the haters, speak against them, because that's the kind of protection I need in order to function. Do you know what? If we can be church communities that can agree to disagree well on some stuff that we're not going to be agreed on, we are a beacon of hope to a world that does not know how to disagree with each other, that weaponizes ideas, that erases and cancels people and tells them you are worth nothing because of your idea that I don't like. Now, I don't want to belittle it because we also live in a culture where people are still vastly discriminated against because of their gender, because of their ethnicity, because of their postcode, because of their ability or disability. So we don't want to pretend that this isn't real. But I think churches can be communities where we love each other. And actually our first identity above race, above postcode, above economic income, above intelligence, above sexuality, above gender, above all of that is I'm a child of God. That's my first identity. And I love being part of a church community where we're all that. And we are a bunch of people who wouldn't normally hang together. How? What a witness to a world that is imploding when they come in and go, oh my goodness, look who's here. Look at the diversity that's here. Look at the wealth of experience that is here. And they what? They love each other. They love each other. They disagree with each other and they still love each other. Wow, what a witness to Christ and the power of the gospel. So we fear sharing our story because we fear it might cause offense. And if you have anyone in your church under the age of 35 and they come and tell you that they've come out in their workplace as a Christian, just remember that's the community that they're stepping into saying, I love Jesus. I love Jesus. It's a different kind of world they're saying I love Jesus into than maybe went before. Number four, the fourth great defeater, too unprepared. So maybe we think, well, what if I would talk about Jesus? I would say I go to church. But what if then somebody asks me a question that I don't have the answer to? What if they ask me about dinosaurs or evolution? Or what if they ask me about suffering? Like, how can God be a God of grace if he allows children to suffer? Like, or what if he asks me about gender politics, about women being allowed to suffer? Or they ask me questions about sexuality. What do I do then? And so we fear sharing our story because we're not okay. We're not ready. We're not prepared to give an answer to the hope that's within us. And what I love about that film is it was a very different tone, wasn't it? She gave him the book of her life and he said, thank you. And I bet you anything, our experience in our head says, if I start talking about Jesus, it won't be a beautiful thing like that. It'll get kind of inflammatory really quickly. It'll get me trying to smack down with the answers. It'll get me trying to defend Christ and stand up for the gospel. And it doesn't feel like the beautiful thing that we saw there, which is why I love that film. So they're four great defeaters. You might not agree with them. That's absolutely fine. But I guess I see a little bit of all of them in me sometimes. And then we have this story in John chapter 9 of Jesus healing the blind man. And I say to you, this story is the antidote to those four great defeaters. Antidote means takes the force out of something. Like, those great defeaters are real. We do live in a culture where it's hard to talk about Christ. We do know people who've been hurt by the church and don't want to hear anything about Jesus. But in the midst of this, we have this story of an incredible encounter. The encounter when Jesus encounters a human being. The most incredible things happen. It's a place of promise and possibility, isn't it? And if I was making up a myth of a godson who comes to earth and does, wow, amazing stuff to get humankind to realize the error of their ways and to turn to this godson, I wouldn't write this story in this way. I would write the story like this. There was a man born blind. Jesus somehow magically knew about this, swooped down from where he was floating above the planet, landed in front of him, said, zap, you're healed. And everybody goes, whoa, what is this mass revival start to the world tour? But what we see is a really human response. Did you clock that when you listened to the story? Like, nobody goes, yes. Not even his parents. They're all debating about whether maybe he wasn't really blind. Maybe he was just pretending. Or maybe it wasn't really, you know, maybe Jesus isn't good. Maybe he's really evil. And that's, you know, they're having this massive debate about it. And the person at the center of it, this poor guy, has to keep answering questions. And then he drops this killer line, which just drops in me like a beautiful bolt. He says this, I don't know anything about what you're saying. I just know this. I once was blind, but now I see. Like, make of it whatever you want. Take it wherever you want to take it. Agree with it or disagree with it. Try and prove it or disprove it. But I'm telling you, I once was blind, but now I see. Like, what's your version of that? like the granular, the gritty. I once was crippled by an anxiety that I thought would always rule my life. I still feel anxious. I still have to bring these overwhelming emotions to Jesus. But fear doesn't control me. I'm free. Like, what's your, I once was blind, but now I see story? Like, you can make of that whatever you want. You can agree with me and think it's just positive thinking. You can think I'm delusional if you like, but I know what it was like before Jesus, and I know what it's like now. And you cannot take that away from me. There's something, like, even in the room, all of you suddenly looked at me differently. Like, because suddenly you knew that's why you're here. If you're going to say that's why you're sat in a row on a Sunday morning, why else would you be sat in a row on a Sunday morning if it wasn't because actually your life's been changed like this? So here we go. Ultimately, this guy's confidence comes from his experience. And that's the heart of the matter, friends, isn't it? In the end, the times I don't share Jesus is because I'm a bit afraid, is because I think I might get it wrong. But ultimately, in that moment, I'm like, Jesus, are you really who you say you are? Like, when I stick my neck out on the line and look like a class A plonker, are you going to come through for me? Or am I going to be left on hanging on my own? Like, it's the confidence that Christ is who he says he is. That's what makes a difference. And I love the Talking Jesus resource. But in the end, what will make a difference for you and me isn't even something as great as a Talking Jesus resource. It's you and your heart of hearts saying, Jesus, will you just reveal by your spirit that you are at work in my life? That all these things I'm going to talk about are not empty ideas from the past. This is living for me now. And when I used to sit in churches and listen to preachers talk about sharing my story, number one, I'd feel real guilt about not doing it. And number two, I'd think, I have to talk about that date back in 1999 when I became a Christian, as if that's all I had to share. Now, it might be you don't have a date when you said yes to Jesus. It might just be in a journey for you. But actually, as powerful as the story of you choosing Jesus for the first time is the story of you choosing Jesus last night. It's the story of you choosing Jesus this morning. It's the story of you saying, Jesus, you're at work in my life now, and the chains are gone. I've been set free, but sometimes I need help to walk out of those chains. Sometimes I sit back in them as if they're still there. And I know I'm not a sinner anymore. Christ has set you free. You're not a sinner, you're a saint. But sometimes I still live as if the curse of death is big in my life. And this morning I chose life again, Jesus, and that's my testimony this morning. And I can't really share that because I'm supposed to be a Christian. Yeah, you can share that. Yeah, you can share that. That's your story. So here are my four great releases. Here we go. Number one. Oh, it's a bit aggressive from the platform. Number one, get over yourself. Oh my goodness, I am sorry. But basically what I'm saying is, regardless of how we feel, regardless of what's gone before, regardless of whether every time we've ever opened our mouth to share the gospel, it's been awful, regardless, God is working his purposes out. The gospel is changing lives. And whether you've had lots of false starts, you're not very good at sharing about Jesus, or you've never tried, actually, Jesus is still king. He is still Lord. He is still reaching people that don't know him with a love and a passion that you and I can only dare to imagine. Jesus is still King. And so we share our story because we choose to trust in God, not our evangelism techniques. As good as they might be, sometimes the best times when we share is when we have no techniques left. We just share, I once was blind, but now I see, and I think this could happen for you too. Number two, the first one, get over ourselves. Number two, step it up. We do need to acknowledge it's difficult. It is a different era. I'm 43 years old, and I still feel that the culture is moving so rapidly that it's constantly changing. I have to keep kind of upping my game to learn what is culture saying, what are the big key ideas. Don't ever, because of your age, count yourself out. Did you know that young people will gravitate to the oldest person in the room who pays them attention? Did you know that? We're launching our Sunday evening service at 6 o'clock today at the Minster. We're focusing on young people and students. Do you know who I've gone to create as my team? The oldest people in the room. Because when these wonderful teenagers and students walk in, fed up with being with 35,000 other 19-year-olds, I want them to walk in and find a 70-year-old who loves Jesus radically and will pay them attention. That's what I want. I've got my little team of them. They're amazing. They're dangerous. They're in their 70s and 80s, and they are so dangerous for Jesus. And tonight, I'm going to let them loose on all these young adults and students who need Jesus and need people in their 70s and 80s to pay them attention, because there's no one else in their life of that age who is loving them like that, many of them. So step it up. There's so much that we can do to kind of arm ourselves, to answer questions. If you think to yourself, actually, how would I answer questions around gender politics? How would I answer questions about suffering or evolution, then we can wrestle that stuff. We can listen to great teachers and thinkers. Two podcasts to recommend to you. One is called The Sacred Podcast. Sorry, my voice is going. From the Christian think tank Theos. And they are episodes every week where Christians and atheists debate respectfully, kindly, debate these big issues. Or The Unbelievable Podcast by Justin Briley from Premier Christian Radio. Brilliant podcast where Christians debate stuff they don't agree with respectfully, kindly, brilliant. You've also got in this church, Ian, Lawrence, Andrew, brilliant theological thinkers who can help you think through this stuff. And we share our story of Jesus because evidence is good. It's good to think through, why do you believe what you believe? We don't switch our brains off when we say yes to Jesus. It's good to have an answer. But also because actually this gives us confidence that all through the ages, the Church of Jesus Christ is having to be finding a way to articulate the faith. Leslie Newbegin says, each generation, the gospel is forwarded to a new address. Jesus is changing lives, and we, the people who are here at such a time as this, our job is to do John Stott's double listen. Listen to the world. What are their questions? What is their pain? What is their suffering? And listen to the word. What does God say about that? Let's become expert listeners to culture and to God's word. So step it up. Number three, two more. Small stories rock. Small stories rock. We always think that we need to have really big, dramatic stories. Otherwise, there's no point sharing anything. If our story isn't at 4 o'clock, and when I was 4 years old, I was a debauched child, and at five, I coloured in a sheet at Sunday school, and I gave my life to Christ. And from then, unless we have those amazing stories, we feel we can't share anything. And the best stories are good, aren't they? We hear people's best stories. Here's a best story for you, and it's true. Last Sunday at the Minster, we had a teenage boy just walking off the street, 17-year-old lad, didn't come with anybody, made his own way into a church. Can we just stop and think about that for a moment? A teenage boy, 11 a.m. on a Sunday morning, made his own way into a big, scary church building. You know, the welcome we give people on the doors, we have to be like falling over ourselves to welcome them, don't we? I find it hard to walk into a new place on my own, do you? And I'm an extrovert. I'm crazy. But that lad walked in on his own. And I got chatting to him. And I said, why are you here? I thought, name it. Why are you here? And he said, well, a year ago, I was in my bedroom. And he didn't tell me what had gone wrong. He said, but there's a crisis in my life. And I just started shouting out in my bedroom to whatever's out there. Whatever you are. Show yourself, whatever's out there. Like, he just began to shout out to whatever's out there. And he said this, I met Jesus. Just said that, I don't know if Jesus physically stood before him or whether just spiritually, but whatever it was, this teenage boy shouted out, whatever's out there, show yourself. And he said, I met Jesus. And then he said, and this morning I woke up and thought, that was a year ago. I probably should meet some other people that know Jesus. So we thought, I'll just come to a church. And if you're a 17-year-old boy that has no experience with church, you go to a church that looks like a church, don't you? So we came in to the Minster. We have people walking into Preston Minster saying, I'm an atheist, but it's not working for me anymore. We have people walking into Preston Minster to hide from the rain. Thank you, Lord, for the rain in Preston. More Lord at 11 a.m. on a Sunday morning. They stay with us. We have people who are lonely. We have refugees that are housed on Preston High Street in B&Bs. And the only time they're allowed to leave is if they go to a religious act of worship. We've had lots of Syrian refugees get permission from their hotelier to come and spend the days with us. We have women who are in domestic violence situations who are rescued and placed in B&Bs in Preston High Street, and they make their way into our building. Because at 11 o'clock, there's us that's open and there's a pub opposite, 12 Tellers. And we've said to the bouncers, send them to us first, then they can come and get their drinks and lunch from you later. But send them to us. We open before you at 10:30. It's amazing. There's some big stories. But do you know what? Even better than those big stories is yours and my small story. So here's my friend's small story this week. Went to the hairdressers. Hairdresser's doing her hair. Hairdresser says, oh, my back aches. My friend says, can I pray for you? Hairdresser's like, all right then. So my friend prays, dear God, please heal her back. Nothing happens. End of story. That's a better story. It's not a better story because something amazing happened at the end. But what's great about that story is that was my friend just saying, I loved you, Jesus, and I know that you're here. And I'm just going to, in this moment, be available to you to do whatever you want. We don't know what's happened to that hairdresser. We don't know the knock on. But out of a beautiful act of love, my friend risked shame, risked looking like an idiot to pray for her hairdresser. We share our stories because we know that God is here now with the power to heal, forgive, redeem, love, bring release, hope, and freedom. And one of my rules of thumb now is whenever I'm chatting to anybody, mostly strangers, I love chatting to strangers, and they share something difficult with me, I say to them, do you know what I do? I have a practice in my life. It's called the practice of space for God. Can we give God space now? And they're like, what's that? And I'm like, well, I believe God is here and he loves you. Can we give space to him to just be here with us? And that's basically prayer. But what does prayer mean if you don't know anything about faith or God? It's good luck, isn't it, prayer? Whereas space for God is something very different, isn't it, in their minds? So step it up. So small stories, rock. And the last one, I'm a coming into land, as vicars, as church preachers say when they're not coming into land. Number four, go the distance, go the distance. We are in a new era, aren't we? Most people we seek to share our story with don't really know much about Jesus. They might have some patchy, flaky ideas, but increasingly the old stories no longer live deep within people's memories. So we need to be prepared to journey well, to be faithful over the long haul, to go the distance with people, to love them well. And to love, I think, is the key. To love enough that we get over ourselves. To love enough that we dare to risk the shame of rejection and looking silly. To love enough that we want them to know life now in all its fullness. There's a guy that's been coming to the Minster right from when we opened it, and I've got permission to share this story. I won't give you his name though. And the first, I met him in a coffee shop, and he said, are you from the Minster? I said, yes. And he listed all the reasons why Christians would hate him and reject him. It came from a place of profound hurt and rejection, and all the reasons why he felt God would hate him and reject him. And I said, thank you for sharing all of that. Would you do me a favor? Would you come and just see? Could you help us to know how to love? Would you come and just hang out one Sunday morning with us? He came and he's not left since. I mean, quite literally, he's with us all day, most days. And he loves serving coffee. And so he serves coffee most Sundays. And he'll say to us at the end of a Sunday, can I still come back next week? I've not converted to your religion. I don't agree with your approach to many of the things that you talk about. But I like being here and I like you guys. Can I come back next week? And we're like, yes, of course, as long as you're happy to put up with our weirdness. And just, you know, and also you make great coffee and we're all massive addicts with coffee. So yes, of course. And I say to him, you know that we love you, whether you ever convert to Christianity, whether you ever buy into this stuff or not, we love you and you're loved. So he keeps going. But it's been breaking my heart. I want to see him knowing the freedom of Jesus. Anyway, last Sunday, he came to our pre-service meeting and he'd written a statement. Love it. And he read out this statement. And the statement ended with him saying, I think I'm ready to say yes to your Jesus. Sobbing. Sometimes, you know, we will see, God will allow us to see how beautiful the difference that he is making in lives. And I don't know about you, but I love seeing the difference that Jesus makes in people's lives. Other times we won't see, but we love and God changes us in that. the love that we think we're doing for them, actually God says, I just want you to see a glimpse of how I love you, how I will relentlessly never let go of you. That the love you're glimpsing that I have for the people in the city centre of Preston is a love that I have for you. And the more that we at the Minster take risks, and my husband heads up the street team. Jason, you might not know much about Jason, so he's the youngest brother of Andy. Jason walked away from faith as a teenager, got into all sorts of mischief, and interestingly was often kicked out of 12 Tellers Pub and slept off a hangover in the graveyard of Preston Minster. That's God's grace right there. So Jason's got a massive heart for people outside of the Minster who don't know Jesus, who spend most of their time rolling spliffs in the graveyard, because that's what Jason did for about 7 years running. And we're seeing God do the most incredible things. And Jason will take the team out most days and hand out flyers and talk to people and pray with people. And Jason, my husband, says this: you give God an inch of faith and he will give you an ocean of grace. Like, give God an inch of faith and he'll give you an ocean of grace. And we've seen God break through in people's lives because God's always doing it. And because we're saying, God, just team me up with what you're doing. Team me up with the Spirit. We want to see your story changing lives. And God, in your grace, if you could possibly use my crazy little stories of just the stuff that you're doing in silly old my life, my ordinary, very boring, very monotonous, very mundane life. But if you could use that to draw somebody to you, oh my goodness, I'm in. I'm all in. There's a wonderful story at in the Gospels where Jesus, in Matthew 14, sends the disciples on the boat across the waves. Did he know a storm was going to come? I think he did. And the storm came, and Jesus walks across the waves to them. And they think it's a ghost. I would think it was a ghost. I've not seen many people walk on waves. And they cry out to him, and Jesus cries out to them. And he says to them, he says this in Matthew 14, "For goodness sake, try a bit harder. Come on, we've been this way before. You've known me for a long time. You should be over this by now. Just get into the talking Jesus stuff. Just talk to your home group leader. Everything will be fine." And Jesus meets them on the other side once they've overcome their fear. Is that what happens? No. Can I just say, no, that's not what happens. Or you're like, oh, maybe he does. Talking Jesus stuff is amazing. Having friends in the gospel is amazing. Having small groups is amazing. But in that moment of fear, who meets them in the boat? Jesus himself. Jesus himself gets in the boat and he says this: "Take courage, it is I. Take courage, it is I." And that word "take courage" is like bon courage. The Greek is literally dig deep and pull it up. It's like picking up your two heavy shopping bags. When I'm having a tough day, I'll say to myself, I'm picking up courage. It's called grace and it's called mercy. And I literally imagine picking up my two shopping bags of grace and mercy. Take courage, pick it up. You haven't got your resources. You haven't got your techniques. It's you and Jesus, and Jesus is everything you need. Take courage. It is I. So this week, as you love your friend and share something about the difference Jesus makes, as you love them enough to do that, just listen to the Spirit whispering into your ear, "Take courage. I am with you, and I love you, and I've got this." Shall we pray? Thank you for this tremendous group of people, Lord, who know this stuff and have been humble enough to allow me to come and share it afresh with them. Thank you for their lives and the excitement, Father God, you have when you look at their lives. Sons and daughters, royalty. I had a picture coming in, actually, of I think it's for you guys, a chessboard. And when you play the pawns, I'm not very good at chess, but my husband's teaching our daughter, and you the pawns you move around, and we can feel a little bit like pawns, can't we? Oh, moving this. But once the pawns, if I'm right, get to the end, they can go anywhere, can't they? They're transformed into royalty. And I had that picture for you today, that our lives can look very much like we're pawns on a chessboard. We haven't got much say over where we work, or, you know, lots of things in our lives are set. And God looks at you and says, "You're my royalty. You're my sons and daughters. You carry, carry the King. When God the Father looks at you, He sees His Son. He sees His Son. He sees the radiance of His Son. And He loves you with an unquenchable love. And the reason He wants to work through your life is because He loves your life. He loves the way you surrender to Him and give Him an inch of your faith. And you dare to hope even when all else looks a bit lost. He's that lovely old man actually sat outside in that film receiving your life and saying, yeah, come on. So may God bless you. May He stir something deep within you. And may faith grow as your love for Jesus grows.